Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop, she's the dragon.
And he's the wolf. Are we talking about us or John and Daenerys?
Both. And just like those two, we are going to unite together to recap the Game of Thrones supersized season finale.
Plus, from Dave Chappelle, Solange, Kendrick Lamar, to Afropunk, to a new documentary about Indian arranged marriage, we'll tell you about the pop culture we've consumed over the past week in New York City.
Also, our completely unbiased review of the new song and video by Miguel that is in no way clouded by our unadulterated lust. And of course, the big sell right now on Inside Pop. Hello, I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel. And this is Inside Pop, your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture.
We're going to share our recap of the Game of Thrones season finale in just a moment. But first, Amita and I want to share a little bit of what we've been up to this past week in New York City, because we've been living the life. Let's get into it, Amita. You saw Kendrick Lamar this week at the Prudential Center in Newark. Not quite New York, but close enough. How was he?
He was awesome. It was such a last minute, should I go, should I not? Oh my God, there's tickets and they're not expensive and he's not far from me. So I went with my cousin and her friends and it's just so much energy. Oh my God, he was incredible. He had this cool kung fu type of theme happening with like the videos he was presenting in between songs and like some of the movements, and he had like this one performer who was doing like kung fu stuff. I was like, oh my God, Sean would love all of this.
How I feel about kung fu. Well, Kung Fu Kenny, that's like some kind of alter ego.
Yeah,
he's created, right?
Yeah. He had Kung Fu Kenny stuff going on throughout the show, and then you know, like it was just amazing to see how hype the crowd gets with every single song. And like, you know, the crowd was really diverse too. I thought that was interesting. There's so many young, all different races. It was really, really cool to kind of get that feeling. And then I think my favorite performance was Humble, because he just started Humble and then he stopped and we finished it.
Interesting.
I don't need to sing this song. I'm going to put this down, and the entire arena just finished Humble, which is awesome.
That's awesome. The last complete verse, last complete chorus?
I'm not kidding, like, not even. He started maybe, I'd say the first verse, if that, and then we took it, literally, for like 2-3 more verses. And then he started the song again, and then we took it. It was amazing.
Give me something natural, like ass with some stretch marks. Who sang that? You or Kendrick?
I did.
Nice.
I sang that.
Nice. That is awesome. I love that you got to see him, because I know how much you love him. That's great.
Yeah, it was kind of great. And one of those last minute things that definitely paid off.
Oh, spontaneity. You fickle, fickle thing. I try to be more spontaneous. And sometimes, as we've known together, it's paid off. So that's great that you did that.
Yeah, another spontaneous thing I did was buy my ticket to Afropunk. I was on the fence and I didn't want to. I was like, I don't know, I should do it. And you were urging me. You're just like, just come. And I just was like, I should just do this. So,
and you did.
I did. But you went both days. I only got one day. So you start, because you got to go on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, for those who don't know, Afropunk is a 2-day music festival that takes place in Brooklyn, usually the second to last weekend in August. And essentially, it is a celebration of Black music and Black culture, really with an emphasis on kind of alt Black culture. So it celebrates freaks and punks and just people who kind of step outside the mainstream in their music. But there's also kind of crafts and different things that are sold there. But for me, the highlight of the festival is everyone just dresses to the nines. And a great combination of Afrocentric clothing, punk clothing, just dressing to express their inner creative other. And so that's amazing. I love that vibe of the festival. And then the music is incredible. The music is like a list of the music we've talked about on this show, especially our big sells.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Yeah. You got to see Sampha, who was one of your big sells to me.
Yeah.
Well, to both of us. That was like a unique big sell.
Right. Oh yeah, that's right. Unprecedented. Sampha was great. He, you know, when someone's music is primarily kind of mid-tempo and mellow, I wonder how they're going to be live. But he was an amazing live performer. The crowd was behind him. I don't think he sped up his music, but just hearing the live instruments and the bass, and he just gave a lot of energy. He was a really, really great performer, and the crowd was all about him.
Nice.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about how I saw Solange earlier in the week, but you also got to see Solange at Afropunk.
Yeah, she was the headliner Saturday night. She was great. For those of you who've only seen her on that SNL performance, have no fear, because over these past months, Solange has rehearsed and she's gained confidence, and I think she's gained a joy in performing. So she had a blast, her band had a blast, the audience had a blast, and she was great. Really, I love her choreography, which is kind of quirky, kind of Martha Graham meets Janet Jackson. But then she just kind of busts out freestyle sometimes. My favorite song of the 21st century, Cranes in the Sky, was beautifully performed live. And we both, maybe let's say FUBU for your conversation about her. FUBU was another highlight. And then just like old school, I loved seeing Soul to Soul. They reunited,
yes,
and they performed at Afropunk on day one. And that album was the soundtrack, I think, to my, I don't know, later college years. All I remember is I went to London, had an amazing semester there when I was in college. And then on the plane ride back, I put on the headphones and Back to Life by Soul to Soul plays. And, you know, 20-year-old John was like, oh my God, it's a sign. But I love Soul to Soul. So, yeah, I just had a great day of seeing bands I loved. And, Amita, we also got to, I think, discover some people we loved.
Yes. Well, thanks to you and the Z Nicole, Mystery Z Nicole, we love you, the Afropunk 2017 playlist that she put together on Spotify that you big sold to me, I was able to kind of get a little bit of an edge of some of the artists that I didn't know that were Afropunk, and was excited to see some people who I never heard of because of that playlist, which is awesome. And one of them was Neo, who is this young British, beautifully voiced singer, songwriter. She performed. She had a huge crowd at her stage during her performance, and I love her sound. I love her vibe. I feel like she has like some tonal qualities to like SWV, but then some like Janet Jackson feeling grooves. I love, love, love Neo. Definitely check her out.
Yeah, she was amazing. We'll connect to something in our show notes. Definitely a link to her official website, maybe one of her videos. She was the best. Also, we were walking to see the Cool Kids.
Yeah.
But we went to the wrong stage and actually ended up seeing Blitz the Ambassador, who will perform at my next big event. They were the best.
They were awesome. Yeah, I was so, so excited that we just went to the wrong stage for that few minutes. I was like, all right, well, I love you Cool Kids, but this is great.
And I think it's rare for me. I think within 60 seconds, I turned to you and I said, I love them.
Yeah, you did. You totally did.
Essentially, the lead singer rapper is from Ghana. He was wearing this badass orange leopard suit. And fashion matters. But he had horns and a live band behind him. And he was just kind of doing covers of classic old school hip hop.
Yeah. Yo, and then he broke out Biggie. Stop it. Everybody just lost it.
Just stop. And then I was looking forward to seeing Michael Kiwanuka, who many people know because he wrote and sings the theme song for Big Little Lies.
Yeah. He's incredible. What an amazing voice. I really enjoyed watching him perform.
Yeah, yeah. He has this other amazing, amazing, amazing song called Black Man in a White World, which I loved both of those songs separately and didn't realize it was the same person. I've listened to his album Love and Hate a few times. It's great, and he was really good live. He had an amazing backup band behind him. Mm-hmm. And so just it washed over me again. 2 days of Afropunk completely washed over me, energized me, but also completely fatigued me. I'm tired.
Yes. We also got to see Gary Clark Jr. and Rafael Sadiq, both incredible performers. Rafael Sadiq had so much energy. I loved seeing him and hearing some of his older group singles from like Tony and Lucy Pearl and some of the new stuff that I remember hearing on Luke Cage. Oh, I love Rafael Sadiq. So I was really happy to see him close out Sunday. And special shout out. Gotta love when you tweet that you're at Afropunk and your podcast buddy Barry from Podcast in Color is like, I'm here too. So we got to meet up with Barry. What up, Barry? It's great to see you.
It was so good to see you. Always a warm welcome. So that was really nice of her. And if you guys don't know, Podcasts in Color is an amazing resource. There's a website which basically has a directory of so many podcasts hosted by people of color. And it's a great Twitter account as well. So just search Podcasts in Color, and a really great resource to find new podcasts. And there's also a good amount of support for podcasts of color. So definitely good networking, definitely good information. So check out her site and Twitter account.
Yeah. I don't even know how all this week happened, but even before I got to see Kendrick and before I got to go to Afropunk, I got the opportunity to see Dave Chappelle at Radio City with special guest Solange. I was living my best life this week, guys. I really was.
It's raining pop culture. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Yes. Yeah, it was an amazing, amazing event. Dave Chappelle, if anybody didn't know, he decided to kind of do like a residency at Radio City for 3 weeks in August. And he started out with The Roots, and he did a couple shows with Chris Rock. Chance the Rapper came. Kendrick did a special secret show with him. Nobody knew he was coming, and he showed up. And all these people would just show up. Everybody would be like, who'd you see at Dave Chappelle? Because there would always be some type of surprise guest. Erykah Badu did a night. Trevor Noah did a night. He was just every single night pulling out all of his friends to come do a show with him. And I was lucky enough to have a friend who bought tickets to the one that Solange was at. And I was like, yes, yes, and I'm there.
Black excellence inside of Radio City Music Hall. Well, first up, Amita, tell me and tell the listeners, what is so special about Radio City Music Hall?
Oh, Radio City is so special. It's got this really incredible Art Deco feeling to a lot of the decor in the building, but it's just this comfortable, lush, gorgeous theater that has incredible sound. It is so iconic. I had the pleasure of being able to run around Radio City for a week last year while it was somewhat empty, prepping for a show that I got to work on, once in a lifetime opportunity. And I got to know the entire building. And it was the first time that I got to go there since that project. And I just had this wave of just like memories and love for this iconic institution that is Radio City. It feels like a band show, you know, like the Hollywood Bowl probably, but it's indoors.
Yeah. And I feel like when people play there, they really know that they've made it. They have made it because they can sell out or fill a space that big. And I think it holds about 5,000, which, you know, it's not Madison Square Garden, but it's just such a beautiful space. It's just such a marker of I have made it to a certain level. I am playing Radio City.
Yeah, and great segue that you didn't even plan. That's definitely how Solange felt. When she was on that stage, I felt she was like so giddy, like on the first day of school, because she was on the stage at Radio City. And she, like, had felt when you started Afropunk, she had this incredible confidence and incredible just energy and joy to performing her music. And I just loved it from the very beginning to the very end of her set. It was amazing.
And FUBU, was that a highlight for you as it was for me?
Yes, FUBU was the best. I was jumping out of my seat. She brought on like 20 other band members, and she's like a small ensemble band. I think about like 7 or 8. But then when FUBU started and she gets to the chorus, there's just a whole lot more people came on stage playing horns and just dancing. Oh my God. I don't know where they came from. There's not a lot of, I've been backstage there too. There's not a lot of room backstage for all these people, but they made it and they came back on the stage. And Solange just had so much fun dancing. She was all over the stage. At one point, she just got off the stage and went not even just like slightly down the aisle. She went like 3/4 of the way down the aisle to just dance.
Oh, yeah.
With the audience. And I was just like, I wish I was down there. I had balcony seats. I was like, I want to party with Solange.
She did that at Afropunk. She got off the stage and walked into the crowd. It was really, really great. And especially awesome. With that song FUBU, you know, this shit is for us. Just like that. So that cluster of performers on the stage and just kind of being in the crowd, it was symbolic and beautiful. She was so good. So much better than I thought she would be. And I mean no offense by that. No offense.
No offense. I'm like none taken. No offense. But yeah, I actually had the same feeling. But
and Dave Chappelle, he got jokes.
He got jokes, y'all. I don't know if you heard a little Dave Chappelle, but he got jokes. He's great. You know, I think the one thing I love about Dave Chappelle, even back when he did Chappelle's Show, is that he'll always be extremely funny and outrageous, clever, witty, but then he will always make sure that he gives you a message, you know, and he talked about Trump and he talked about, you know, Black Lives Matter in his own way. But, you know, at a certain point when he gets a little bit more serious, it has more weight. And it's just, I don't know what it is about him, but he has a great way of balancing that tone. And he did it really well that night.
That's great. That's great. And you're hearing an exclusive because phones weren't allowed, which.
Yes.
So yeah, you're probably not seeing a bunch of stuff on the internet from that concert. And I think that's fine and good.
No, it was actually really freeing. You don't get to see. The only things you actually get to see are if, you know, celebrities were backstage or if Dave Chappelle's posted something himself, because there was like this whole system where you put your phone in a pouch and they lock it. And so you couldn't use your phone the entire night. And it's weird. It's so weird because we're so dependent on them. But in an awesome way, you really just got to be there for the experience, which is awesome.
Okay, guys. We promise we are going to get to our Game of Thrones recap and our review of the new Miguel single soon. But we have a couple of other things we want to talk about. Some really interesting things that happened to us in New York City. Amita, you moderated a Producers Guild screening for a new documentary. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm grateful for the Producers Guild to give me the opportunity to moderate a screening here and there. And, you know, the ones that I've done have been for the First Look documentary series, which is a great way for people to learn about documentaries that have come through the festival circuit, either Sundance or Tribeca, or some other really popular festivals that maybe people don't know about, maybe don't even have distribution yet. And we get kind of like a look at them. So I had done one last year for Tickling Giants. And one earlier this year for a Sundance doc winner, Dina, and I got to do this one, which won an award for the best new documentary director at Tribeca this year, and it was called A Suitable Girl, and it was directed by two South Asian female directors, Smriti Mundra and Sarita Khurana, and I adored this documentary. It basically took you through the lives of three women who were going through the process of getting married in India and the traditions of arranged marriage or set up marriage, if you call it, matchmaking. It was such an interesting and beautifully told story of these three women just trying to find a husband.
Very, very interesting. Very interesting, especially in the age where every single one of my single female friends is talking about their trying search to find love, mainly using apps. I think that would be really interesting to see this documentary about finding love or finding marriage through a very traditional means.
Yeah. And for me, I, you know, this is something that's not foreign to me. You know, my parents were arranged. All of my aunts and uncles were. I still have relatives in India who are getting arranged as well. It's just kind of making sure that people understand what arranged really means. It's the families both have to be involved. There's a lot of discussion of if they're a match. Like, it's not just like you and you get married. You know, they do take the time to see if they get along and if the families get along. And there's just so much that is interesting about these women who are also ambitious and want to have careers, but also have to respect the tradition of marriage that has been in our country for centuries.
Ooh, that sounds fascinating.
Interesting dynamic. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
And when does the film open?
So that's the thing with this series, and this is kind of like a call out to anybody who may know somebody who can distribute a documentary. Right now, no one can see this because they are looking for funding to possibly get into theaters and on other platforms. Until that happens, nobody can see it. But they are going to hopefully get on iTunes in January and Amazon in March. I would hope that maybe before then, they'll be able to get a theatrical release, even just for a short period of time. If anybody knows anybody, let me know. I know the directors now. They're awesome. And hopefully I can make a connection.
Take 10 of those theaters that played Baywatch and put this movie in there instead. Come on, Hollywood. Yeah. Let's do this.
Definitely.
That's awesome. Now, and finally, we actually, a little podcast love, we actually went to a live podcast show, which was a blast. The podcast, The Greatest Generation, which is on the Maximum Fun Network with us. Ben and Adam, the hosts of that show, had a live show at the Bell House in Brooklyn, and it was hysterical. It was so much fun. For me, the most inspiring thing was just seeing how much the crowd loved them, and then also seeing how Ben and Adam, who are not stand-up comics, like many of the people on Maximum Fun, they are actually in the TV business like us, but how they had confidence and really commanded the stage in a really interesting way. So it was a great show. So their tour is just wrapping up, so you may not get to see them on this round, but a really, really awesome show.
Yeah, it was so cool just kind of to see these guys who have such a popular podcast and see the crowds that come out for them and lining up to meet them after the show. It was really inspiring for the two of us, you know, and we got to actually hang out with them afterwards at a nearby bar and meet some other fans of their podcast. But also we got to meet fellow Maximum Fun podcaster Stuart Wellington from the Flophouse podcast. So that was a nice surprise too. We're like, wait, you're on Maximum Fun? So are we. And it was really fun to just, you know, kind of meet some other people that do the same thing we do in the same network as we do. So
Max Fun represents.
Yes.
Okay. That was exhausting. I don't want to have a week this fun again for a while. I need to rest up. But
well, spoiler alert, I'm seeing Lady Gaga tonight. I'll let you guys know about it next week. But I might be, who knows what I'm doing in the next few days that might surpass it. I don't know what will. Guys, it's been a crazy week.
Look around.
It's the greatest city in the world.
Thank you.
That's all I know. Okay. I haven't seen Hamilton. Maybe that'll happen this week. Oh my God, that would just top it all off.
Okay, New York City's aight. But you know what place is better than New York City? The Seven Kingdoms.
Shall we start singing? Dun, na, na,
na, na, na. Swords and dragons, and swords and dragons.
And Starks. Okay, that was terrible. That was off key. All right, guys, I think you guys know. If you have not seen the Game of Thrones finale, please stop listening right now. We're going to spoil it all in many different forms.
Yes.
It was epic.
Jump ahead 20 minutes. Set
Please.
Your timers now.
Okay, go. Game of Thrones finale, The Dragon and the Wolf. Oh my God. A whopping 16.5 million viewers watched the show live or the same night they streamed it.
That is a
Game of Thrones
record. And in 2017, that is enormous. That is remarkable. Especially for a show that has such a dense plot. I mean, it means that people who have watched casually or maybe never even watched before watch that finale Lord knows they were confused, but I bet they still enjoyed it.
I bet they did. And oh my gosh, even though we were at Afropunk until later on in the evening on Sunday, we still made it home to watch that finale.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler free. We exactly. avoided the social media and we got to watch it. And now it's time for our last Game of Thrones recap and reaction for the season. It's a little sad.
Oh, yes, it is. But I'm not that sad because no one I loved got killed. So that made me relieved.
That is true.
Let's start in King's Landing, shall we?
I'll join you.
So many characters from all seven kingdoms and beyond the Narrow Sea all converged in King's Landing. And my heart was racing every time, you know, one character who hadn't seen someone in three seasons would yeah. walk past. Just the eye contact, the little asides. It was really, I mean, it felt like a remarkable moment for the show. It proves that the producers and George R.R. Martin have known all along where things were leading, because just the convergence of those characters was pretty incredible.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And they did such a great job of just, like, you know, those interesting quick facial reactions. So like when Brienne of Tarth sees the Hound, what now?
Yeah, and
like,
and
their
you,
reactions.
Yeah, and are they going to fight? Are they going? But I loved their mutual admiration. Yep, we tried to kill each other.
Yeah,
good job trying to kill me. I thought I did kill you.
I did. And then when I think what the coolest part was when everybody started to enter the pit.
Yeah.
And there was lots of sibling situations or familial situations happening. Theon and his uncle, and Cersei sees Tyrion, and oh my gosh, there's just so much happening and so much tension. And then the Cleganes, just out of nowhere, hey, we're all sitting, we're about to start this really important meeting. Hold on. I just need to go talk to my brother and just let him know I'm coming for you.
Yes. I think the fans have been calling it the Clegane Bowl, yes. which is that, you know, that battle royale, which will, I mean, I think the executive producers, Benioff and Weiss, have now shown us that they hear us, they know what we want, and we will get Clegane Bowl next season.
Oh my gosh. But it was just hilarious how they kind of just like inserted that in there, like, we need to talk. Sorry, y'all.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, Queens, King of the North, I'm sorry, I gotta do this, and then I gotta go get a zombie.
Right.
Hold, please.
I love the Hound so much, more than I ever thought I would.
Me too.
I ever thought I would. But kings and queens aside, Brienne of Tarth is really my favorite character. And Amita, you remember a few episodes ago, I said that I wanted a Brienne spinoff, and I wanted it to
yes.
be a procedural.
Yes.
I've changed my mind.
What do you want now?
Brienne of Tarth fixed my life. Because she fixed the Hound's life in a way, and she knows how to fix Jaime. She is Jaime's moral compass. She's like, speak to your queen. You know this is wrong.
She does. She does. She's good. She's so smart. She's really smart, guys.
Brienne of Tarth fixed my life.
Not enough Brienne of Tarth this season.
No, not a lot, but I think we'll get a lot of her next season.
We better.
And just for me, the other highlight in King's Landing was, I think, two of the strongest actors on the show are the actors who play Tyrion Lannister and Cersei Lannister. And
yes.
they haven't shared a scene together, I think, in three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing those
two,
oh my God.
That scene was so tense. And like in Game of Thrones fashion, I'm just sitting here like, they're really going slow. Oh my gosh, the mountain's behind him. What's going to happen? She already said earlier, just kill my brother. And then he takes a sip of wine. I was like, that wine is poison.
Like, I know.
I was just waiting for impending death. But I knew that they wouldn't kill him. But I was so nervous because it's Cersei.
Yeah, but she killed him in another way. She played him and she played everyone. And I actually don't think she's pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
I think her touching of the belly, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's all a Game of Thrones. She's the big bad. I mean, there's the Night King and then there's Cersei Lannister. and they're both big bads right now.
Yeah. And then that other conversation, just to stay in King's Landing, the conversation between her and Jaime, and again, he's like, fine, kill me. Like, she had to face both of her brothers, and one brother slash lover, and basically who both said, I'll call your bluff, just kill me then, if you want me out of your way.
I thought he was gone too.
He pulled out the sword. What? Oh my gosh. And then for her to kind of just double cross everyone. My biggest question is, when Tyrion said, you're pregnant, they cut. And then Cersei and Tyrion are walking back out into the dragon pit. So I was like, what happened in that conversation? Because the next time Cersei's sitting here like, I ain't sending my troops.
Well, I think what happened is, I think you're meant to assume that she says, yes, I am. Don't tell anyone. Okay, now I see what you mean. I have a child inside of me, and this child's future is important. I think she used his belief that she was pregnant to convince him that she's finally seen the light. Because otherwise, I think Tyrion would have been suspicious. If she had just said, yeah, I hear your logic, you're right, I'll join you, he would not have believed her. But the fact that she, you know, let him believe that her mind was changed because of the realization that her child's life was at stake, that's, she used that. She used it.
Yeah. And to talk about siblings manipulating each other, or in this case, banding together.
Ooh, are we heading north?
We are heading north to Winterfell, y'all.
Open the gates. Let me in.
The Stark sisters. I can't sing it like you sing it.
Oh my gosh. They're looking for a mind that works, works. They are the Knoll sisters, actually. Sansa's Beyonce, Arya is Solange, and Littlefinger is Jay-Z up in that elevator.
Okay, ain't nobody got their throat slashed. Okay, they're fine now.
Solange,
they're a happy family now.
Beat down
okay.
Jay-Z and Arya beat down Littlefinger Westeros style.
Okay.
Okay, so I love this. Everyone knows who's listened to these recaps that beyond Jon and Dany, beyond Cersei and Jaime, my emotional commitment and connection is with the Stark children, specifically those two sisters. And it really hurt me this season to see them reunite only to get at each other's throats. So I was thrilled, real thrilled that they, along with their brother Bran, actually one-upped Littlefinger.
Don't put three Starks together. It's going to wear you all down. Three Starks, incredibly smart, all powerful. Oh my gosh. And they're just like, you stand here accused of murder and treason, Lord Baelish.
Dun, dun, dun.
My sister asked you a question. Yes!
I have one question, Amita. At what point do we think they wisened up to him? All along? Or, yeah, what point did they realize, wait, we're being played?
I have a feeling it might have been before the conversation with Sansa and Baelish. I think that conversation, the two of them alone, where he says, I like to play a little game and assume the worst. And all of those thoughts that Sansa had that started to lead to the fact that, you know, Arya wants to kill her and wants to be Lady of Winterfell. I actually feel like she knew at that point that Baelish was pulling a lot of strings, and she said everything to make Baelish believe
gotcha.
That she was under his spell. So I feel like they conspired a little bit before that conversation.
So the scene last episode in Beyond the Wall, when Arya was walking toward Sansa and she was holding the knife, and then she flicked the knife and gave it to her, they were actually being manipulated at the point. They were at each other's throats, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so they wisened up between that scene. Okay, that makes sense.
That's my theory.
I got it. We owe Bran an apology because we were calling him useless.
So not useless.
He used that three-eyed raven. Well, no, he is the three-eyed raven. We should stop calling him Bran.
Yes.
Don't call him out his name. I wish that Robert Mueller were the three-eyed raven. We'd get some things necessarily done. But yeah, I love that the three of them together, and I mean, they are the only living Stark children, because
Oh, here we go. Segue to the next, which everybody knew was happening. Everyone knew this eventually would get revealed. And of course, it's as soon as you saw Samwell Tarly enter Winterfell, you're like, oh, here we go. Here we go.
So, in summary, Jon Snow is not Ned Stark's bastard. Jon Snow is the son of, and you're going to help me out, Rhaegar Targaryen.
Yes.
And Ned's sister, Lyanna Stark.
Yes.
And he was not born out of wedlock. He was born after they were secretly married, which means that Jon actually, more than Dany, has a right to the Iron Throne.
Yes. And they revealed that his name is Aegon Targaryen.
Oh, I missed that. Thank you.
Yes. No, she said it. So Lyanna said it to Ned while she was dying in childbirth.
Okay.
His name should be Aegon Targaryen. And so basically, I guess that was inferring that Ned wasn't okay with that and gave him Jon Snow instead.
Meanwhile, as Bran, as the Three-Eyed Raven, is traveling back in time to see all of this, Jon and Dany, nephew and aunt, are getting busy on the love boat.
Yes. They were getting it. Get it. It was interesting the way that they intercut that whole scene, you know, where, first of all, just props to Samwell Tarly. Hey, Bran. Hey, what's going on? I'm the Three-Eyed Raven. Cool. What's that mean?
Everybody says that.
My favorite conversation.
What the hell are you talking about?
That's my favorite conversation. And then, you know, and then Samwell's like, no, the High Scepter wrote it in the thing that they got that marriage annulled. And he's like, what now? He's like, well, can't you go see it, Three-Eyed Raven? And he goes to see it. And, you know, it was great that Bran could just go right there and see everything happen. But at the same time, Jon and Dany getting it on. And, you know, they planted the seed earlier in the episode where Jon's like, well, how do you know you can't have children? There's going to be a baby. That's my prediction.
Okay, well, since you're giving predictions, I have two questions for you, because some people on the internet think that this is going to, that this revelation, whenever it comes to light, Dany will not like it. Dany has spent her life believing she is the heir and knowing that even though she's fallen in love with Jon, she will not like and resent him because he actually has more of a right. Do you believe that?
That's not, I mean, Dany has worked so hard for this point. You know, she has sacrificed so much to become queen. I see this theory here. She might be mad.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, she might be mad. And the other thing people are chatting about on the internet, they will be freaked out that their nephew and aunt, which I don't think they should be, because I want everyone to be real with themselves for a moment. When you were a little kid, you had an aunt or an uncle who was cool, who was stylish, who was nice to you and treated you like an actual adult, not a kid. Everyone has that aunt or uncle, and you had a crush on them. So calm down. But how do you think Dany and Jon are going to feel?
A crush is not sleeping with them, though.
How do you think they're going to feel?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. It's just, the whole thing was odd. Can I just ask one side note, though? Do you think Tyrion's in love with Daenerys?
Did you say side cheek? Because...
Oh, here you go.
Jon Snow's side cheek was on point.
I mean, I think I saw full cheek, and I still enjoyed it, so thanks.
It was too blinding. I could only see the side cheek. It's like that solar eclipse we watched together. I had to watch it through a pinhole. Okay.
So, Tyrion in love with Daenerys, you know, with his long linger outside that door.
Yeah, he is. And I guess we were silly for not believing that, because he keeps saying, I believe in her because she's going to make the world a better place. But what heterosexual Westerosian who is in her presence for more than a few hours doesn't fall in love with her?
Yeah, she is a strong, gorgeous, smart, calculating, powerful woman. And that's checking a lot of boxes off for Tyrion, because he's not very challenged by some of the women in his life in the past. And Daenerys challenges him so much. That's got to be a turn on.
Yeah, which, I mean, listen, we can't go into the final season with everything peaches and cream between all the allies. So I think, yeah, that's going to make things interesting.
Oh, it definitely will. And to speak of next season, for those of you who are wondering, it's going to be a little bit. There's a little while because they have to actually start production and shoot all of next season. But there will be 6 episodes. That is what has been announced already. There's rumors that these episodes might be like the finale, a little bit longer. There has been rumors that they'll be like feature length. But as we know, the reason things might be shorter and things are moving faster is because ain't nobody got the money. And so making longer episodes means a lot more money for CGI and for shooting schedules. So I don't know how much they're going to be feature length, but they could be supersized. We'll see. Let's hope. They've got to wrap up a lot in 6 episodes. And as of now, it seems like people have been doing the math. The last 2 seasons of Game of Thrones took between 9 and 11 months to go from the beginning of production to an air date. It's almost a year. In season 8 could premiere as early as summer 2018. The actor who plays Jaime Lannister, who I cannot say his name, but Nicholas Coster-Waldau, I think, he said that he's starting production in October.
Yep.
So if we do the math, hopefully July, August, fingers are crossed. There's some people who are saying it might get pushed to 2019.
They are liars.
I don't want to hear that talk.
They are
liars.
God.
I don't want to hear
it. I can't. I can't with that 2019 business. Do you know what it's been like for me waiting until February of 2018 for Black Panther? Don't do this to me. Pop culture.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's just skip ahead to what is my favorite theory so far. And I don't want to name names, but someone we were hanging out with at the Greatest Generation after party at Hinterlands Bar in Brooklyn. I'm not going to say who it is, who I think it is, because I don't want to give credit to the wrong person. But my favorite theory is that at the end, there will not be one person sitting on the Iron Throne, that the kingdoms will be split into 7 again, and they will realize that that is the way to peacefully coexist. I love that theory.
It's the utopia that Game of Thrones never saw coming.
Well, it's like the United States of America. I mean, not this year, but it's like... but when the United States has been at its best, it's like that. You know, states, provinces, regions living together peacefully, sharing borders. I like that theory. Maybe that'll happen, but we'll
I do. I enjoy that theory as well.
Yeah. Okay, amazing. Thank you, Benioff and Weiss, and all the actors and production teams who travel around the globe to film that amazing season. I think season 6 is still outshines season 7. I think the storytelling was a little bit tighter. I think there weren't, you know, a little bit of kind of how the Raven fly that flat. Raven fly that fast plot holes. So, but still a super fun season. And I haven't had so much fun watching and talking about a show since Lost.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way. And there's so many things just like Lost where there's articles and blogs with Easter eggs about how this looks and what this is like. And, you know, and Cersei standing here and Jaime standing here, it means this and theories and stuff. And that's always really, really fun to kind of read up and get your mind going, which we'll be doing for the next year.
We're all nerds. Okay, coming up after this very short message, we are going to tell you why the new video by Miguel is a must-see.
Are you sad and confused about world politics? Worried about the upcoming inevitable nuclear war? Or maybe a rat is living in your house? There's a rat living in my house. How do you get rid of a rat from a house? Why not immerse yourself in a completely fictional, imagined podcast for the beef and dairy industries? It works for me. The Beef and Dairy Network podcast is the number one podcast for those involved, or just interested, in the production of beef animals and dairy herds. Don't worry, it's funnier than it sounds. Find us at beefanddairynetwork.com or maximumfun.org, or wherever you get your podcast from. Oh God, there's the rat! Oh God!
Welcome back to Inside Pop. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. Up next, we've waited for new music from Miguel for almost 2 years. His last album, Wild Heart, was released in 2015 and landed on a number of top 10 lists, including ours, most importantly. This past week, he released a new video and single called Skywalker, hopefully from an upcoming album. So we're going to tell you all about it. not just the shirtless scenes. Amita, what were your first impressions?
Well, I wanted to talk about the shirtless scenes
first. In addition to,
Okay, all right. Let's be serious first. Let's put back on my, I am a proper podcaster. I had as fun as my week was last week, it was also a long week. I had a rough week. And Sean saw me in the morning on Friday and said, I know it'll cheer you up. And he showed me this video, which was incredible. I was like, what are you talking about? Oh my God, it's Miguel. And I can see him and I can hear new music. Happy, happy day. It's such a fun track. I have to say my first impression, I think I said to you, I was like, it feels like he's going a little bit more commercial. And I think that's okay. You know, I think it's much more like a party track. And I was like, if he'd released this a few months ago, it would be like a song of the summer. It's such a fun, fun song. And the video shows that fun just as much. He's at a house party. He's having a great time. Beautiful, diverse group of young women and men just partying at a house. And even made me happier that the song was already featured in the latest episode of Insecure. Yes. So I was like, it's a hit. And Insecure, you're still my favorite. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Miguel.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I was not a Miguel fan, believe it or not, until 2015 when Wild Heart came out. And the thing I loved about Wild Heart was and is how it is Miguel giving you a little R&B, but also rock and alternative and being weird and being vulnerable and not being typically R&B. So let me say this first. I love Skywalker. I wonder if I would have loved Skywalker if it had been the first thing I paid attention to from Miguel, because like as you said, it is pretty straightforward R&B, and my prejudice against Miguel was, oh, he's an R&B singer like so many others. So I'm so glad that I'm getting Miguel this way, and who knows if this slightly more straightforward single is indicative of what the rest of the album's going to sound like. But if it does sound like it, I'm down. And I love the fact that I think I tweeted about this. I love when an artist releases a first single that's kind of mid-tempo. It's not kind of big and pay attention to me, I'm back. But when Janet Jackson released That's the Way Love Goes, I'm going to take you guys back now. Mid-tempo, cool, sultry, but not a big I'm back people, but I feel like an artist is really confident when they do that. And so I love this single, just sounds so confident to me, and yeah, so melodic. I love it. And the video is great too. The video is directed by Director X, who I have never really heard of before. Maybe you have, but he's done a lot of other videos.
Oh, yeah. Director X is awesome. He's done tons of videos for a lot of R&B and hip-hop artists. Drake, Hotline Bling, Rihanna Work, stuff with Usher, Iggy Azalea, Eve, Jamie Foxx, Wiz Khalifa. I can keep going. Yeah, he's a great director.
Yeah, he's a protege of Hype Williams, who I think is the king. He sits on the music video Iron Throne, Hype Williams. So he was a protege of him. So he learned it well.
Yeah. All I need to know is when the album's coming. How soon is this? Or is this just like a one-off single? Miguel, you know we miss you. And I can't wait. Because once an album comes, then there'll be a tour. And we get to see him yet again.
Amita, let's be real. All you really want to know is how you get yourself invited to the next house party with Miguel, as depicted in that music video.
Oh, hell yeah. I need to go to Miguel's house party. Please watch the video, guys. You want to be at this house party.
Listen, we love objectifying Miguel, and we will continue to do so. No one can stop us. But seriously, we also love his music. It's so good. You know what? In my ideal world, I'm going to speak it into existence. Miguel plays Afropunk next year in 2018.
That would be so amazing. I would love to see him there. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think he would, and I think he'd be a great choice for it. But yeah, that would be awesome. And you know, Miguel, just holla. Just holla at your fans. You know, I'm still going to always hold dear to my heart that I am the reason you love Miguel. I've been pushing him on you for years, and you finally came around. Miguel, I'm working for you.
I'm giving you 60% credit and Janelle Monáe 40% credit. Because actually, I'm realizing the first Miguel song I ever liked was his amazing duet with Janelle Monáe, Primetime.
It was, yes, that's incredible. And I was pushing him on you before that, but yes, heard that, you were like, oh, that's the Miguel you've been talking about? I'm like, yes, Sean, that's him.
You got 60% credit.
I'm going to go with 80. All right. Well, we will have the big sell right after this short message.
Mugs, shirts, stickers, patches, tanks, and more are yours for the purchasing at MaxFunStore.com. Hey, you already love the podcasts, so why not take this to the next level and outfit your home and bod with our merch? MaxFunStore.com. Because if you have to wear a shirt, it should be one of ours.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. It is time for the big sell. It is the segment in which Amita and I take turns recommending something from pop culture to the other. And then within a week, that person has to listen to it, watch it, read it, and report back. Last week, I big sold something a little different. The Arts and Humanities Committee's resignation letter to President Trump, to Amita. People we love, like Jhumpa Lahiri and Kel Penn, among other great artists, sit on that committee, and to protest so many things that Trump is doing, they resigned from the committee. And so they wrote this amazing letter, and I big sold it to Amita. Amita, what did you think?
Thank you so much for this big sell. What an incredible letter to kind of inspire you to just stand up, speak up, to not let hate win. And it was incredible that this committee was like, I'm sorry, I cannot support this. I cannot be part of an administration that has not respected the arts and respected just basic human rights anymore. You know, I think that, you know, I think what they said is speaking truth to power is never easy, Mr. President. And then they said art is about inclusion. And the humanities include a vibrant free press. You have attacked both. That was it. That was all that I needed to read. You know, it's the truth. And it's got to be hard being in this committee and, you know, actually saying, sorry, bye, White House, not doing this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I respect them. I mean, many of them were appointed by Obama. And I think there's some people in the committee who may have been appointed by Clinton. So they were sitting on this committee when Trump won, you know, and a lot of people did resign when Trump won and took office, but right. Those, I think 16 people remained. And I think, yeah, to me, it was a very powerful statement. And it was a statement that artists, actors, singers, writers do have a right as much as anyone else to share their political views. And let's be honest, especially when I agree with those views, it's a very powerful thing. So,
yeah.
So good. I'm glad you, what's your rating for this?
Well, thank you so much for making sure that I read it. I told you all last week, I was like, I tried to read it and I never got a chance. So thank you for making me read it because it was important and definitely inspiring for me, somebody who grew up in the arts. So I would give it a 3.25 stars for sure. It was incredible, incredible moving letter.
Awesome. Awesome. So what do you have for me this week?
Well, it's not as moving nor as powerful as that letter, but I think that everybody's going to start to feel a little bit of Game of Thrones withdrawal, and HBO felt the same way. So as much as they may have ended season 7 with that finale on Sunday, the network has unveiled a small 7-part behind the scenes series on HBO Now, HBO Go, HBO On Demand, and on their YouTube channel. I think the first episode is on the YouTube channel, which is what I'm selling to you. It's called The Game Revealed. It features interviews with the cast and crew that provide new info and insights to how some of the biggest moments from this 7th season evolved. So you can watch the first episode on YouTube right now. Anybody can watch it right now, but then you'd have to go on HBO Now or Go or On Demand to watch the rest of the episodes, which are available each Monday. So every Monday, you can still relive some more Game of Thrones for the next few weeks.
Swords, swords, dragons, and swords. Thank you so much for that big sell. I do have withdrawal, and you know how I love behind-the-scenes stuff.
I know you do. I feel like this is more like a gift of a big sell than anything else.
You're talking to someone who watches, who like bought the Blade 3 DVD and listened to the director's commentary. I just eat that stuff up. So yeah. Thank you very much. I appreciate you and HBO for doing this.
Thanks,
Can't
HBO.
Wait to check it out.
Yay.
Well, that's it for this week. Stay in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders, and head over to InsidePopPodcast.com to find out more about us and also to subscribe.
You can also find us on MaximumFun.org alongside a great group of podcasts dedicated to comedy and culture. And also on that note, we have to give a quick shout out to Jeremy Frank. He runs the Maximum Fun New York City unofficial fan group. And we also met him at the Greatest Generation After Party. He's such a delight. He was so nice. He took some photos. If you guys are into Maximum Fun podcasts, and if you're not, you should be, and you're in New York City, you should definitely join the Facebook group, MaxFun NYC. Jeremy runs the group and is so supportive and, you know, gave us a nice little shout out for our podcast on the group as well. So thank you, Jeremy.
An honor meeting you. I would also like to give a shout out to Chris Lamb, who is at 81clam on Twitter. He pointed out that, oh, Chris Lamb, you are my new best friend. Quickly, there was an Inside Pop quiz, Amita sprung on me, and one of the questions was, name two houses where everyone is dead. And I did not get the question. Amita said one of the answers was the Baratheon house, everyone's dead. Chris Lamb, thank you, because you pointed out that Joffrey and Tommen and Myrcella, a.k.a. LaToya, are actually Baratheons. And I think that means I get some more points retroactively.
I will review this with the judges, and I will let you know. You just wanted to say LaToya Baratheon again. Okay.
Chris Lamb said LaToya Lannister.
Chris Lamb.
So.
I applaud you. First of all, thank you for listening, Chris Lamb. I will go back to the guide on HBO and refer to the judges, and we will have a judgment next week.
What all else right. is happening next week, Amita?
Well, as you guys may all be feeling, fall is upon us, which means new fall TV, films, music. We can't wait. We're going to have a preview of what we're anticipating, what we're looking forward to in autumn.
Cannot wait to share our fall picks with you. Until then, stay with us on social media and have a great week, everyone.
Bye, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.